Support for The Exchange podcast comes from you, our listeners, and from McLean Middleton, New Hampshire's largest law firm. For over 100 years, they've been committed to their clients, community, and colleagues. Locations in Manchester, Portsmouth, and Concord, New Hampshire, and Woburn and Boston, Massachusetts. Learn more at McLean.com.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. For more than 40 years, a program known as Current Use has helped keep New Hampshire's open spaces open. Current Use was first proposed in the late 1960s at a time of rapid population growth when many Granite Staters worried that forests, farms, and wetlands were being paved over. And so they approved a constitutional amendment to allow a separate type of lower property assessment for undeveloped land. The legislature codified this into law in the early 70s, and today more than half of the Granite State's land base is enrolled under current use. But the program has faced skepticism. Some critics feel it is at odds with our state's heavy reliance on property taxes overall, and they want the matter studied in the legislature. That's what we're looking at today in The Exchange, and let's hear from you. Whether you have strong feelings about current use or whether you have no idea what it is, send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, comment on Facebook, tweet us, or call in 1-800-892-6477. We have two guests for the hour. Rusty Keith is here, former selectman for the town of Lyme in the Upper Valley. And Rusty, thank you for making the trip, and good to see you.
Great to be here.
Also with us, Charlie Levesque, president of Innovative Natural Resource Solutions, a consulting firm. And Charlie, welcome back. Good to see you, too.
Good morning.
Charlie, current use, sometimes described as a discount or a reduced tax rate for owners of forest land or farms or wetlands. How do you describe it, Charlie?
I certainly don't use the word discount because I don't believe the legislature went anywhere near that. And certainly the constitutional amendment, which passed, remember, by 2/3 of the voters in 1968.
It's very hard to get a constitutional amendment passed.
It is very hard. So at that time, what was going on really that spurred it on was what was happening in the Merrimack River Valley and the seacoast, where, you know, our most valuable land still is. But that valuable farmland, think Litchfield and areas like that, was being taxed out of that use. In other words, farmers were being taxed for that farmland at rates that were beyond what they could afford given growing corn or whatever they were doing. And as a result of that, land was being developed that probably shouldn't. At least the landowners didn't really want to develop it, but they were forced into it by high property taxes. That really is the genesis of this, to assure that if you don't want to develop your land, if you want to keep it as forest or farm, that property taxes don't force you to do that. That's really where the constitutional amendment came about.
So it's not a discount on your taxes. It's a lower assessment based on the lower profits that you'll get from that land?
Exactly. I mean, right? The fallacy is that there is a discount off of the regular way that we tax. It's called ad valorem. We won't use that word anymore. But it's the regular way that you're assessed at your house and your yard, which is basically the full market value of that as a house or a yard. That's not what the system doesn't discount off of that. It has a completely separate system that got created in RSA 79A, the law, that says this is an equally valid system that's based on the current use of growing trees or growing ag crops. That's really what the law did after the constitutional amendment allowed that law to be passed by the legislature, initially in 1971 and then in 1973, very similar to what we have now.
So, Rusty Keith, you've said current use has gone too far. What feels too far to you, Rusty?
Well, the rates that are actually being applied to this current use land is significantly, almost virtually 97% lower than what we would normally have as market value of that property. So it's and I would venture to say I disagree with the fact that I do believe it is a discount. It's a discount from the standpoint that the property owner has to apply
for that lower assessment category.
Right. It's not a given. It's not a given by the law. It's not a given by the constitutional amendment. It's something that the law says you must apply for. And if you apply for it, we'll give you a discount. When you apply, you're making a promise to the taxpayers in your town that you will not be developing that land. And for that promise, we give a discounted tax rate or tax assessment. And when you break that promise, then we charge a land use change tax. And that land use change tax is meant to be a return to the taxpayers for some of the lost revenues, or transferred revenues, as I like to refer to it, from the current use program.
Now, I'm familiar with your town, Lyme. It's beautiful, right outside Hanover, so probably some pretty high property values there. What's wrong with current use? Somebody from the outside might say, wow, current use is really keeping your town pretty.
Well, what's wrong with it is that nobody measures the discount that we're giving. And so I asked that question 6 years ago and couldn't get an answer. I couldn't get an answer locally. I couldn't get an answer from the state. And I found out that the reason we didn't get an answer is that the state doesn't collect the data.
Because that's the fallacy.
Town by town.
The law doesn't say that that's how it works. That's why we don't collect it, because they're two equal assessing systems.
Two different systems.
Yeah.
So I want to let Rusty finish. Go ahead.
Yeah. So that's one way to look at it, that it's a different system. But the fact of the matter is that the day someone comes in to enroll their land in current use, they were taxed at a particular assessment rate one day, and the next day they're taxed at something different. And when they do that, the difference between those two numbers is what calculates out to be a discount or a shift of the tax burden. And it shifts that tax burden from that property onto the rest of the town in the form of an increased tax rate. And when I calculated then what that shift was in the town of Lyme, it comes out to it costs the taxpayers of Lyme in a shift $1.75 million.
What are the benefits to the people in Lyme of having land in current use?
Well, the benefits that the law assumes that we're paying for into this encouragement, essentially, if we read the law, it says we're discounting this property value to encourage people not to develop their land. So not having the development, you know, people will argue that you don't have as many kids in school, you don't have as many community services.
Ambulances, fire departments,
exactly.
Things like that.
Even roads, maintaining your roads, et cetera, et cetera. So open space is good. One of the things I want to make sure people understand is that I am not opposed to current use. I understand the law. I understand the intent. I understand what the encouragement is. But I'm looking at, when I say it's excessive, that the encouragement, what does it really take to encourage someone not to exercise their right to develop their land? Does it take a 97% discount? I think it's excessive. I think a 25 or 30% discount would be adequate.
Well, maybe that's something that we can talk about. Is the problem really current use, or is it just the way that it's structured? I want to remind everybody, though, that they can join us with their questions and comments about current use. And as I said a moment ago, whether you have strong feelings or whether you really don't understand what this is all about, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. An email came in earlier from Matt, who says, my family has resided in the area since revolutionary times. We have conserved the beauty of New Hampshire that draws people to live, visit, stay, recreate, and enjoy timber products. Matt says, here are some of the reasons to keep the current use law as it exists. Sustainable timber harvests give towns 10% of gross stumpage value. The property places no burden on the town. No children in schools, no crime, no fire department. Matt says, our properties are not posted, but registered as recreational current use, thus open to hunting, fishing, hiking. He also says, a number of the family properties host one of the major snowmobile corridors. These properties represent a significant distance and would be very difficult to replace if lost to development. And Matt says, current use acts as a buffer against climate change. Matt, thank you. And I'm glad he wrote Charlie the Vec to you first. What do people enrolled in current use promise to give back? He mentions the snowmobile corridor, for example.
Yeah, so that's not part of it. Motorized recreation is not something that you must allow, is not. There is a category within current use called the recreational adjustment, where if you take an additional 20% off the assessment, then you must allow pedestrian public access, not a snowmobile or an ATV, but pedestrian public access for hunting, fishing, hiking, all those things. If you don't take that, you don't have to allow it. But the fact is that there isn't much posting of land against pedestrian access in New Hampshire, largely because of current use.
So people will post maybe no hunting or no ATVs, but most people don't mind if you hike or snowshoe.
Yeah,
through
it's
their
a tradition.
Land.
You know, this tradition is really in Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont, and not many other places in the whole country where we have a tradition and a culture of keeping land open for pedestrian access for those purposes, and we don't charge people. A lot of other places in the country, if you've got private land, you post it against all access and you charge it. But current use has allowed that, and obviously that's a big part of our economy, the recreation economy. The fact that people can have access to land that's not the White Mountain National Forest and or state forest or parks, all this private land, is a big boon to the economy of the state.
So what do you think, Rusty, getting back to what you said earlier? You're not arguing against current use. You just feel like it's too extensive. What do you think about some of the benefits that Matt mentions and that Charlie mentions?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I would have to say I once again would argue that the incentive that's provided in the law for people to keep their land open, it's not part of the law unless they do that. Then it becomes an extra 20% discount. That 20% is only applied to the remaining 2 or 3% of, let's say, assessed value that's remaining after you apply the basic.
Untangle that a little bit for me, because I'm not great with the whole property tax system and how it works. So go ahead.
Look at someone's market value.
Yeah, give me a for instance.
And a for instance is, let's say it's $100,000 market value property, just to use round numbers. The current use discount, when you apply the assessed value for current use, drops that down to $2,000 to $3,000.
That's a big difference.
That's a huge difference. And then you turn around and say, well, we're going to give you an additional 20% discount if you open your property up to the public. Well, 20% of what? 20% of 2%? That's like, it's not much money. So we're actually finding in the town of Lyme more and more and more people are posting their land. And so our locals who have been around for a long time will tell you that they used to be able to hunt this land. They can't hunt it anymore. They used to be able to hike on it. They can't hike on it anymore. So, yes, we do have a lot of land because we have 92% of our land in current use. So of our taxable open land is in current use. So a lot of that land is available still for hiking and so forth. But it's not all the land, and a lot of it is not available to the hunters anymore. So it's not an incentive in that light. And I've always gone to the current use board and argued that point, that these extra incentives really carry with them no financial incentive for the landowner anymore. And that's one of the reasons we don't see stewardship on our property. The current use board decided that 40% additional discount for stewardship in forest was appropriate. But again, you take 40% of 2%, you're really less than 1% additional financial incentive. So people don't necessarily need to put sustainable stewardship on their properties anymore.
Charlie, can you address that $100,000 example? Getting that discount, it does sound pretty huge from $100,000.
Well, again, you're all using the word discount.
Yeah. Okay, sorry.
And it's not in the law. It's not in the Constitution. Yeah. So it's not a correct word to use here, because there are two equally valid systems for assessment. That's what the constitutional amendment did, and that's what the law does. So you can continue to say the word discount. It's incorrect to say that. So it's based on the current use of the land, and that's what the constitutional amendment allowed for in the statute, right? So as growing trees or growing agricultural crops, what is it worth in the marketplace? That's how it's based on. And so the second fallacy, I mentioned fallacy number one, which is that it's a discount. That's fallacy number one. They're two equal systems. The second fallacy is that if you didn't have this, or as Rusty says, reducing this, he uses the word discount. I never use it. It's not correct. You know, to a much less differential between the full market value assessments, that people would just pay that and keep their land as is. And that's the fallacy number two. If you raise the rates, or if you got rid of current use, people are not going to pay these high taxes. They're going to sell their land, and that's going to wreak havoc in the real estate markets. Land value prices are going to plummet because there's going to be a whole bunch of land that's undeveloped on the marketplace. And so, you know, the notion that you can raise things and things won't change and we'll just get more revenue, that's fallacy number two. It's not going to happen, because people are not going to keep their land if the taxes are too high. That's why this was created in the 1960s.
I have a bunch more questions for you guys, but let's go back to our listeners. Matt, thank you for the email. You can email us as well, exchange@nhpr.org. We are taking your questions, comments, concerns about current use today in the Exchange. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. And let's see, Tim is calling from Mount Vernon. Hi, Tim, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a selectman over here in Mount Vernon. Mount Vernon being a town with a lot of open space. and no commercial tax base. So we definitely feel the pressure of the property tax burden, which I might add is the second highest property tax burden in the United States. So I agree with your guest, who also happens to be a selectman, that the current use program is not broken and it doesn't need to be fixed. And I was just shaking my head yes when he was talking about what would ever happen if we raised all the taxes on everybody's open land. It would be a disaster. So all this talk about discounts and about tax revenue, it all boils down for me to one thing. I mentioned it already. We have a huge property tax burden. We're not going to solve this problem by taxing everybody's open land. We're going to solve this problem by putting leadership in our state capital, Concord, New Hampshire, that can deal with this program, this problem that's an age-old problem. I mean, how many years ago was the court decision that said the state is not providing enough money for public education?
Back in the 1990s, yeah. Tim, thank you for calling in. And Rusty, what do you think? I'd love to hear from both of you on this, but Rusty, you first. You know, don't pick on current use or any other type of tax program. Look at the bigger problem, the bigger context that current use finds itself in. I wonder what you think about this.
This is really what comes back to the gist of my whole situation on this, is that the property tax is a distribution tool. It is not a consumption tax. It's not. We don't base people's amount of tax on how much of the community services they use. So we can't look at these studies that have been done that said, hey, you know, forest land doesn't send kids to school, and therefore they should get a lower assessment rate. Property tax simply takes all of the property in town and the value of that and divides it into what the social services cost, and we come up with a tax rate. And that tax rate then gets applied to everybody, and it's a fair and equitable distribution tool. What we've done to deviate from that is we've come up with laws like the current use law that says if you enroll and you make this promise, as I mentioned before, we'll give you a lower rate. So what that does is it shifts that tax burden that would have been on that property onto the rest of the town. And so that's what these towns that have a huge amount of current use, they just don't have a tax base anymore, because the tax assessment rates are so low for current use that you've eroded their tax base.
Charlie, what do you think?
Well, I don't think current use is the problem. That's what I think for sure. And, you know,
the
notion.
Picture? We
have a certain tax structure in the state, and I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole, and that's for maybe another show, and you've done many shows on that. But for current use, you know, when land comes out of current use, there's a land use change tax, and that revenue goes back to the town. But here's the fact. If the land gets developed, and, you know, most of the development that happens happens in a residential way. We certainly have commercial development that happens in the state, but most of the land that comes out of current use goes into residential developments. That means more houses, more families, more kids. And, you know, that is expensive. And we know from the research that, in fact, those houses, those kids, we love the kids, cost a lot. And it costs more than the revenue you're going to get compared to current use. I know we got a break.
Well, and coming out of that, I do want to talk a little bit more about the housing, because now with New Hampshire's housing shortage and demographic decline, some housing experts, as I'm sure you know, Charlie, are kind of pushing back on that notion that housing always means an explosion in costs. We'll talk about that, and we'll take more calls at 1-800-892-6477. Email is great, exchange@nhpr.org. You can post on Facebook, you can tweet us. We'll be back in a minute.
Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Edvest in You, a local New Hampshire nonprofit providing college student loans and student refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, current use, what it is, how it works. More than half of the Granite State's land base is enrolled under current use. That means open space gets different preferential assessments for tax purposes to encourage owners to keep their land undeveloped. But as we're hearing, the program has faced some skepticism. We're finding out more, and we're hearing from you. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Tweet us, comment on Facebook, call 1-800-892-6477. With me in studio, Rusty Keith, former selectman for the town of Lyme in the Upper Valley, and Charlie Levesque, president of Innovative Natural Resource Solutions, a consulting firm. And just to give listeners a picture of where current use is applied, we heard earlier a caller from a selectman in Mount Vernon, actually, who said there's a lot of land based in his town enrolled in current use. Charlie, to you first, what parts of the state tend to have the most land enrolled in current use?
Well, clearly, if we look at the big cities of Nashua and Manchester, there's very little current use land left in those cities. There's still some, but maybe, you know, hundreds of acres versus a town like Rusty's that has thousands or tens of thousands of acres. I'm not sure how many acres are in current use in that town. So, you know, once you get out of the urban areas, there's a lot of current use land in all the rural communities. So I live in Antrim. The Monadnock region has some very rural communities. Rusty's in the Upper Valley, and, you know, there are very rural communities there. So it's more about the rural nature of an individual town than it is whether it's north or south, although clearly there's a lot of current use land in the north. But, you know, don't discount the Monadnock region or all the way into Merrimack County or even some of the seacoast areas where there's still a lot of open land, very valuable land. But, you know, it's spread around, but probably, you know, reasonably spread around. But look at rural versus urban. I think that's our break.
Do you think, Rusty, that current use affects your town Lyme more than it might in another town in a very rural area, given that you are located next to, you know, near the city of Lebanon and also the town of Hanover, both, especially Hanover, you know, wealthy town, higher property taxes and so forth?
Right.
So does that make a difference?
Absolutely, it does. And so in the town of Hanover, for instance, we're right next door. So part of my studies have included Hanover and Orford, another rural town. But there's no doubt about it. The more rural the towns are, the more current use land they have and the harder it is for them to afford their property taxes, and therefore it's hard to fund their schools. So one of the things we're hearing right now, and it's big in the state, we got to find a way to fund our schools. Well, when we discount our assessed values of towns to the point that we raise our taxes beyond where people can afford them, then you can't afford your taxes for your schools. And so when I did the study comparing Lyme to Hanover, the town of Lyme pays $5 of its $27.19 tax rate as a result of the reduced values of current use. In the town of Hanover, believe it or not, we actually have three districts in the town of Hanover, and each district pays a different amount of inflated tax rate depending on the district. So they have a fire district, which is more rural than the downtown district.
Which makes sense, given that you get the college
and,
there.
And so because of the system that we have in the state of how we calculate our taxes, the people in Hanover in the forest district or pay a higher amount on their tax rate for the current use that's in their town. It's even within the town of Hanover, but it's only 88 cents, whereas, you know, in the town of Lyme, we're at $5. In the town of Orford, they're at almost $5, $4.80. So it's, yes, and Concord and Nashua, I mean, virtually zero. None of those property owners, which is the interesting part about the fact that it took a two-thirds majority vote. You know, here it is sort of taxation without representation. Two-thirds of the population of the state is really down in our southern quarter, and there's no current use down there.
So they don't feel it the way that you
feel it.
Although we did hear from Mount Vernon earlier, which is in the southern tier.
That's right. But I'm just saying, the bigger cities and so forth, and you know, they don't feel it at all.
Where the people are.
But I would disagree that there isn't current use in the southern part of the state. In fact, I think current use is much more valuable in the southern part of the state than it is in the north country. And that is because the real estate values for development are much higher. In the seacoast, you look at the triangle, right, from Concord to Nashua to Portsmouth. In that area, we have fantastic land. There's a lot of open land that's still there. That land would not be open if for not for current use, guaranteed, because of land prices being so high. If that land didn't get the assessment that it gets in this alternative, very equal system under current use, it would get developed. And again, I suggest that if it's developed, the notion that we're going to get a lot more tax revenue from a piece of land doesn't necessarily mean we come out ahead. Because if the services required to that developed land are much higher, we might have a net loss of revenue at the property tax.
Again, level. Roads, sewers, schools, and so forth.
Yeah, absolutely.
Although some housing experts, hang on, I'm sorry, I want to jump in. Some housing experts, though, we've done so many shows on housing recently, Charlie, are pushing back on this notion that, oh, you build housing, you're automatically going to have a million kids in your schools. Housing economist Russ Tebow wrote recently that while New Hampshire has added 68,000 new occupied housing units in the past 20 years, school enrollment has dropped by more than 31,000. So it's not necessarily given that if you build it, you're going to get a bunch of kids. And by the way, with our demographic problem, you know, maybe kids are a good thing. Maybe we want kids.
But Rusty alluded to before a series of studies that have been done at the town level. And we were commiserating before we came in here about how many. It's probably 20 to 25 communities have had something called a cost of community services study done, right? Which looks at the classes of land use in town and whether or not the revenue coming from property taxes to those classes essentially pays for the services required.
I see what you're saying.
Three categories: industrial, commercial is one category, residential is another, open space is the third. Every single one of those studies has said that open space pays for itself. In other words, the services required are paid for by the current use taxes. Commercial and industrial, that's a big winner for communities. Unfortunately,
they pay a lot of taxes.
They pay a lot of taxes.
Too much in services.
Yeah. But residential is where most of our costs are associated with. That's because that's where we live. That's where our kids live, and we love our kids. But, you know, that's where the costs are. And so that class of real estate does not get paid for by the property tax.
Go ahead, Rusty.
So this is where we differ in our ideas of what the distribution tool of the property tax is all about. And there's no doubt in those studies, I find them to be irrelevant to the property tax argument. And I'm going to take it one step further and say, if they would have divided that property up into, take the residential and divide that to those houses or properties that house school-age children and use that as a subset, there's no doubt that that subset would be the most expensive cost of social services, and the property taxes to those properties do not pay for it. I did a study in the town of Lyme where 75% of the town does not house school-age children. And so basically what that says is that 75% of the town is needed to help offset the costs and make it affordable for the 25% of the housing or property that does house our school-age children. So the whole argument of trying to measure how much we actually consume of our social services is irrelevant to the argument of the property tax. We just share our social services according to the value of our property.
I'm going to ask one more quick question, then we got lots of people who want to jump in. This is great because people really want to ask questions, give their thoughts. Do you think, you first, Rusty, but Charlie, you too, do you think that current use is part of the reason we have a housing crisis in this state?
I most definitely do. Because particularly in the rural areas, we can't get people to sell off their land to develop. We have a lot of conservation easements and conservation land in our area, and we need property that needs to be developed, and nobody wants to come into our area to develop because the existing land is so expensive, and we just can't make it affordable for anybody.
What do you think, Charlie?
Well, I think that in this program so far, we've just been whipping current use to death. And I think we've got to go back to the fact that there are tremendous benefits to current use.
Ecosystem services.
Ecosystem
cleans
services.
The water, cleans the air.
And our recreation economy, which is so based on open space. And we're not thinking about that. We're just thinking about the things that maybe are problematic, or at least some think are problematic with the program. So I don't think it's the problem at all. I think that, land is coming out of current use every year, and when that happens, it's going into development. So I think it can happen. It does happen all the time, and so land is available for housing. I mean, we don't have studies that say it isn't.
Yeah. Oh, we've heard from fans of current use during this show. Matt sent a very positive email. Our first caller was all about current use. So I don't think it's fair to say we're whipping it, but I think there's some concerns and some questions given the housing crisis and given our demographic decline. So I just wanted to give you an opportunity, Charlie, to reflect on that.
Well, fair enough. Fair enough.
Okay. Let's go back to our callers. Bob is calling from Greenfield. And Bob, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. You know, my wife and I, we've had a couple pieces of property that have been in current use. And the whole point that was raised about development, you know, I think that's a legitimate point. And if you've taken advantage of the tax break by having your land in current use, if you decide to develop that property or sell it off for development, then I think there should be some additional penalties for doing so that go back to the town to help offset everybody else's property taxes.
Well, and I think, Bob, Charlie, correct me if I'm wrong, I think that
it happens now.
What, 9 or 10 years ago, the legislature passed something to that effect, right?
Well, no, it's been in pretty much from day one.
Okay.
Yeah, if you develop your land, first off, backing up again, when you enter land into current use, you have an application process, et cetera, there's actually a lien that gets placed on it, and that gets filed at the Registry of Deeds, right? So this is a permanent lien. And you can't go to the selectman in town and say, I want to take my land out of current use. You cannot do that once it's in. The only way that can happen is if you change the use to a non-qualifying use. In other words, you develop it. And when you do that, there's a 10% penalty on the full developed market value of that piece when it comes out, and that goes right to the town.
So that there is some tax benefit to the town, sort of making up for what it might have
lost over the
years?
And there have been studies that have looked at that for individual parcels that show that, in fact, the towns recoup more than they lost, as it were, compared to that other equal system called ad valorem.
Go ahead, Rusty.
I'll disagree with that because I have the numbers, actually, to show. So we have a property right now that's being developed that was 100 acres that was in current use for the last, it's been in there for almost 30 years, but the tax records in town were only available for the last 20. And in the last 20 years, the property taxes that have been shifted to the rest of the town from that property because it's in current use have been around $330,000. Now, when he's developing this property, he's not going to pull out the full 100 acres. I don't know yet. We haven't seen the land use change tax, but they're only going to pull out whatever portion of it they're going to develop. And yet, it's an estate, essentially, that's being developed here. And the town I have to question, what did the town get for that $330,000 of tax money that the town actually paid on their behalf for them not to develop this land? We have clean air. We don't have housing in that. But were we going to have that anyhow? I doubt it.
I wonder what you do think, Rusty, about what environmentalists are calling ecosystem services. We know more now about the role that forests and farms play in cleaning our water. There's a lot of concern now about rapid runoff, given the heavier precipitation we see these days. We're told that if you don't pave it, sucking up carbon and trees and grasslands helping us with these large amounts of rainfall that we're seeing. And so some people are saying, hey, open space provides ecosystem services that we would have to provide in some other way if we didn't have those meadows and swamplands there.
This is where I'd say, once again, I agree with the basic intent of the current use law, but I have to wonder about how we're funding it. And that's the biggest question, is how in the world are we funding this? Because basically, if you look at the market value of this forest land, that we have out here, is it really impacted by development rights? Yes, it is down in the southern core. I have to agree. The southern area where we have limited amount of open space land left, that has huge development value added to its market value. But up in the north country or anywhere else, there is no development value essentially in the market value of that property. And yet if we compare what the market value is compared to what the current use value is up there, it's a huge, huge difference. And that's where I'm saying we've gone a little too far. Let's give them a discount. What's the discount that should be? What's a relative amount that should be? But, you got to look at the property as a property tax.
So would
model.
You feel a little bit better, Rusty, if the assessment were a little less generous? You're not quibbling with the philosophy of current use. You just are quibbling with the numbers. You feel it's
right.
Too generous.
That's my first step, I have to say. Another step that I've been taking recently is trying to understand, well, this is a law that is to slow down, essentially, development, not stop development, because the property owner can turn around and develop and pay the land use change tax. But It's to slow down development is what it really was started for in the 1960s and 70s.
Because people were afraid that, you know, paradise is being paved over. So
yeah, exactly. So we didn't want that to happen. And so we slowed that down. Well, today, one of the biggest pushes that we've seen are these conservation easements. Well, what do? They actually take away the development rights to that property. So I've gone to the current use board and asked them to say that a criteria for being a participant in the current use program and asking taxpayers to help pay the property tax that was associated with that property, that should require, the criteria should require that the land be developable. If it's not developable, why should the taxpayers have to pay to encourage that landowner not to develop their property?
Go ahead, Charlie. I can see you on jump
yeah,
in.
Yeah, just to respond to that one thing. We have another statute that addresses conservation easement lands that's similar to current use, but this show's not about that. But just so you know, those lands that are permanently protected can be in this conservation restriction assessment. What I wanted to go back to is sort of the values that Rusty thinks are too low for the assessment. Those are done in New Hampshire in a scientific, economic way, in that the ranges for farmland are $25 to $425 an acre assessment, not the taxes, the assessment, then you apply the tax rate to that. And in farmland, it goes all the way up to $176 an acre. Those aren't just pulled out of thin air. Those are done with an econometric model that says, what is this land worth to grow trees as a crop? What is this land worth to grow corn as a crop? That's how those numbers are derived. I think that's the best way to do it. It's really what the law intended. Other states literally pull a number out of the air and say, maybe this is much. You know, Rusty is really kind of saying this is too little, and he would just pull a number out of the air. And I think that gets really political. And this is not political because it's based on sound economic kinds of models that are used by the current use board.
What do you think is the answer then to concerns that people like Rusty raised that this is too much of a strain on their town budgets?
Yeah, I think it's another issue. It's not current use.
Can you give a little? I guess I'm wondering, is there room to give a little on current use?
Well, I'd say that we could go to a system where there's a random number that's higher than these numbers that are there, but I'd tell you that in other states where they've done that, it gets very political. Sometimes the legislature sets those rates. I don't think it's a better system than what we have now, because now it's based on real economic numbers. And so it's not an individual saying, I think it ought to be $500 an acre, which is what happens in other states. It doesn't work as well.
Go ahead, Rusty.
So this is my most recent problem with the current use laws. I just went to the current use board and asked them for access to this model, because I don't want to be critical of these rates without knowing how those rates are actually determined. And when I asked to see the model, I was told by the current use board that this is proprietary information to the Department of Revenue and not available to the public.
Well, Laura, I think that's wrong.
You can't assess it.
They should give that out. They should provide that.
This would be more transparency.
Yeah, and they're not doing that. So the public does not know where those rates come from. And are they a shot in the dark? I don't know.
All right. Coming up, we will talk a lot more about this. I have a lot more emails and calls that I want to share with both of you. And we'll go to Lancaster and talk to Peter Powell. He has seen this issue from a number of different hats that he wears, both as a landowner, a realtor, an economic development person. So all that's coming up after a short break. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Access to abortion is changing. So is the way we talk about it. Safe, legal, and rare used to be a catchphrase for those in favor of abortion rights. But now, some supporters say that's too stigmatizing and that we shouldn't be afraid to put abortion front and center. Abortion and its changing rhetoric, that's next time on 1A.
That's This Morning at 10 here on New Hampshire Public Radio. Support for NHPR comes from your listeners and from Capital Center for the Arts, presenting Capital Jazz Orchestra's Holiday Pops, featuring holiday favorites, special guest, and a sing-along December 22nd. Details at ccanh.com. and from the New Hampshire Moose License Plate Program, thanking drivers for helping to preserve the state's natural, historical, and cultural heritage, online at mooseplate.com. Mostly cloudy, a chance of rain today. We'll have high temperatures in the mid-30s. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoi. Tomorrow, we return to Capitol Hill and NPR's coverage of impeachment hearings. That's Tuesday morning, live at 9. This hour, the open space program known as Current Use, how it works, and its impact on the Granite State. We've been hearing from you, too. Send us emails, exchange@nhpr.org. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Rusty Keith, former selectman for the town of Lyme, is with us in studio. Also, Charlie Levesque, president of Innovative Natural Resource Solutions. And joining us now by phone is Peter Powell, landowner, realtor in Lancaster. He was also co-chair of the COAS Economic Development Corporation. And Peter, it's always nice to have you. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
How do you, Peter, just personally interact with current use yourself as a landowner or a realtor or a North Country taxpayer and resident?
Like everybody does, I think, who whether you own land or not, you interact with it. It's certainly critical to our landscape here in the North Country as well as throughout the state. I am a landowner, very happy and privileged to be. I could not own the land I own if it were not for current use. I would be very worried that if we tamper with it or break it, that land ownership could become the province only of the wealthy and those among the wealthy who are interested in owning it. And that would change a lot of demographics and dynamics around all of our communities.
No, go ahead. Go ahead and finish, Peter. That's fine.
Well, I think if the problem is the struggle over that we have with each other in the local arena over what our neighbor is paying. If we tamper with this thing, we can only look forward to losing the economic underpinnings of our forest. Just like the Main Street program determined that you could only preserve buildings and preserve architecture if you can find economic uses for it, that's true of the forest as well. And if you take out current use, that becomes impossible to accomplish. And I believe that this discussion is really important because it really reveals the fact that it's just another consequence of our over-reliance on property taxes to fund both state and local services here in New Hampshire. But as important as the discussion is, we shouldn't be doing it or having it in a vacuum, for it is not the problem, but only a consequence of the real problem of the property tax condition here in New Hampshire. I'm fond of saying when I'm down south that the North Country is the steward of the image that much of the rest of New Hampshire has of itself, but which can't be found everywhere now. But it's a hard job to maintain that image. The truth is, we share it with many other parts of New Hampshire, and it's a tough job in all those parts, all those rural communities. If we were to remove current use or alter it significantly, it would be even harder to do. And I'd like to put some meat, you know, others in the show have referenced the problem of the state fiscal policy, and I'd like to put some meat on that, if I may. 65% of all state and local tax revenues come from property taxes. We have the highest reliance on property taxes of all states in the country and the second highest per capita. In this century, the state has pushed down harder, and our reliance has grown as a consequence of fiscal policy and decisions to downshift responsibility and withhold funds that are due to our cities and towns, all of which drive up our rates. And if these things weren't happening, this discussion wouldn't be happening.
So current use is just part of this broader system and is being, I don't want to put words in your mouth, Peter, unfairly singled out because of larger stresses within our property tax system? Is that what you're saying?
Unfairly singled out, yes. But it's really critical to have this discussion where it belongs. You know, I sometimes use an analogy, which I hope you forgive, that I feel like we're gladiators in ancient Rome, fighting with each other, trying to overcome perceived opponents, when what we really ought to be doing is turning on the emperor and the Roman Senate, telling them to stop the games and take on the struggle of reform. Because fighting with each other, worrying about what our neighbor is going to pay, and deciding whether or not to fund education adequately or take care of our elderly or do any number of the myriad things that we're doing on behalf of the state really misses the mark. And we need to undertake a careful analysis of our state fiscal policy and understand why it is hurting so much at the local level and impacting everything from a landscape to the future of the kids in our schools. We're now paying, through property taxes, 73% of over a $3 billion cost of public education. School Building Aid hasn't accepted new projects since 2010. The state stopped paying its 35% contribution to pension funds for teachers, police, and firefighters, which is costing us $20 million a year.
So, Peter, instead of fighting with each other, look to the broader problems you see with the state system. I guess I would ask you, just for the purposes of this show, while the emperor is still in charge, as you put it with your Roman analogy, could current use be made better?
I don't think we should even talk about it. We shouldn't be talking about trying to make it better, because it would be like picking out one of the problems at New Hampshire Public Radio, for example, and deciding that you're going to improve the whole process by eliminating one single problem. I know that as a staff and as a board, you look everywhere all the time to make sure that what you do is done well. You look to the future, you look to the past, you understand the consequence of everything you're doing, and you take on responsibility. That's the job that New Hampshire has for all of its fiscal policy, not to fool around with individual aspects of it or to fail to see the impact of every decision that's made at the state level and how it increases the rates and the burdens and the problems of our cities and towns. I could go on with my litany of ways in which those things have happened by the failure to distribute revenue sharing, the towns and cities share, half of their share is not being paid from rooms and meals. There's a moratorium on environmental grants. We pay at the local towns and cities pay 93% of the non-federal share of Medicaid for long-term care that cost cities and towns $52 million in 2018. So if you collect all of these things together and more and look at the impact on property taxes, you will find why we struggle as we do, why we complain as we do, why we fight with each other as we do. And somehow it's been orchestrated in such a way that we continue to do that instead of turning around and demanding the reform, which must happen.
Okay. Peter, I'm going to let you go. We've got lots of people who also want to jump in with their questions and comments about how current use works, how they see it in their communities. Thank you very much for being with us this hour. We appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. Bye. That's Peter Powell again, landowner, realtor in Lancaster, also former co-chair of the COAS Economic Development Corporation. Our number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Charlie and Rusty, write to our listeners. Jeff is emailing from Hillsboro. He says, all I'm really hearing with this program is how unfair our reliance on property taxes in New Hampshire is. It's time for a broad-based tax, Jeff says. Michael also says, I've been curious about how often audits are conducted to check with the landowner compliance with the conditions of current use. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Michael. I think I'm going to throw Jeff and what Peter Powell was saying to you, Rusty. Again, let's stop fighting with each other. Let's look bigger picture, more systemically.
Oh, that would be fantastic. I agree with it as a prior selectman that there's no question about it. We rely way too much on our property tax. But being as it may, that's one of the major issues that because that's what it is, I'm looking at saying in the town of Lyme, that's 20% of our tax rate. And so therefore, I'm very interested in what the impact of current use is. And it's the rural towns that have the most difficulty funding their education under our education funding problem. We rely 65% on our property tax to fund our education program for our kids. And if we're going to continue to do that, we have to pay close attention to how we are handling our property tax model and system. And we're not doing that. And to the question of how many times we're looking at how well we're doing in our current use, we're doing a very poor job of that.
In terms of compliance, or what Michael calls looking at compliance checks on the conditions of current use, can you address that too, Charlie?
Yeah, there aren't really that many, and there's not a whole lot of field oversight in the state because it's set up so that we don't have to do that. In Vermont, for instance, there are state employees who have to go out and look at every single timber harvest, and it's very expensive. We don't do that here. We rely on a simple system, and that's why we have such great enrollment in the program. And so the checks and balances that happen are really about making sure the land is still in open space. And so the checks happen at the local level. If somebody files a building permit for a piece of ground, first thing that they look at, the assessing officials, is to determine whether or not it's in current use. And if a structure is going to go up there, then that land use change tax has to be implemented. So really the checks and balances happen at the local level when we're talking about on the ground oversight. And I think it works well.
Here's another email. This is Katie in Durham. My uncle was smart enough to apply for current use status for a family farm when the law was first passed. Thanks to that move and to current use, we've managed to hang on to the farm my grandfather bought when he moved to New Hampshire in 1906. Wow, Katie. My taxes in Durham are now $48,000 a year, and that is with 70% of the land in current use. Had current use not been in effect, Katie says, the farm would have to be sold off decades ago. Instead, there's 1,000 feet of untouched waterfront on the Oyster River that doesn't have pollutants and nitrogen running into it. There's 30 acres of open space and forests that provide food and cover for native species, all within a mile of downtown Durham. So there's Katie talking about some of the what we called ecosystem services that current use provides. Andrew in Orford writes, in New Hampshire, all the timber is taxed separately from the land. It is considered or is similar to personal property. When timber is cut, a timber yield tax is paid. It is similar to a deferred property tax. Given this tax over many years, it is not obvious that land does not pay its fair share. Why doesn't Mr. Keith use this in his calculations? Timber is sort of a different animal in this, right? Because when a landowner makes money from a timber harvest, he or she does pay money to the town.
Correct. And I believe that we really, when it comes to the timber tax, you have to go back and look at what was the intent and the purpose of the timber tax. And it was originated back when the paper industry owned most of our forests. And they did clear cutting, and we wanted to stop clear cutting. So we instituted a timber tax.
I'm going to disagree with Rusty. That's not the history of the timber tax. The timber tax was instituted because prior to when it was instituted in the late 1940s, what happened was that the assessing officials at the local level had to assess based on the land and the timber. And that encouraged people to cut timber because it wasn't separated out. The timber tax was a conservation law that was put in place so that you don't pay the tax until you cut the timber. But if you assess it and tax it when it's standing, it encourages people to cut more. So it was actually a conservation law that was put in place.
Wow, that's complicated but interesting. Go ahead, Rusty. Did you want to add anything else in there?
No, I think, it is a component. But once again, I'm going to step back to the basic idea of the property tax and say that, I'm sorry, but property is taxed according to its market value. That's the basic model of the property tax. And we've jumped into that and deviated from that model with the current use in the most egregious way. But we've also done it when it comes to our elderly exemptions and our blind and all the other exemptions that we offer. The interesting thing that we don't do in the state is that we don't consider current use deductions or reductions to their assessed value as an exemption, much like we should, in my mind, because that's what we do with our elderly exemption. The elderly's homes are valued at their market value, and then we decide as a local community how much, if depending on their age, how much of that
and their
gets
income,
discounted.
Right? So
and
low
their
income. If what, you're a wealthy elderly person, you don't
exactly.
get a discount just for being older.
No, that's right. But it's still, we do have an elderly exemption, and it's recorded differently on the MS-1 report than current use is. And I'm one to say that current use should be recorded exactly the same way. Show the gross value of the town and then show the exemptions.
Not done that way, Lorik, as I said at the beginning, because the legislature in its wisdom set up a separate, equally equally valid program that is current use assessment. So it's not a discount off of the full market value system.
I have one last question for both of you. As you both know, State Representative Bob Guida is going to introduce a bill in the legislature next session to establish a study committee on current use. There have been attempts before to establish study committees on current use, which have not been successful, which, again, to the uninitiated, you think, okay, just study it. What's the problem? But what do you think, Charlie? Turn to you first. How do you feel about the idea of a study committee on this issue?
We do that very well in New Hampshire. We like to study things before we file legislation. I think it's a good thing. I don't think it's ever a problem. We've done it before. I've been part of study committees over the last 4 decades. And so it's always good because the big thing that happens during a study committee is that everybody involved gets educated. So I think,
which is what we tried to do today, sure. But in a study committee, you have a lot more time and a lot more stakeholders at the table.
Yep. Sure.
So you're not opposed to the idea of a study
committee
from the legislature. No. How about you, Rusty?
No, I've been pushing for one now for 6 years.
Yeah, and
we got very close to it.
Yeah.
The last time I was here, we were very close to that. There was a bill, but it got squashed by the basically the beneficiaries of the program. The forest industry is a very large lobbying group, and they basically squashed the bill before it made its way for the legislators to consider.
So you would like to see a study committee, all those people sitting down and saying, okay, what are the concerns? Let's hash it out. Let's create a good bill, or at least take a look and say, all right, this is fine or this is not fine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's exactly what I've been pushing for a long time. There are so many aspects of this law that I didn't want to get into here today that I've seen over the last 6 years. And I just think it's time. So one of the biggest aspects of this is because it's a state law mandated by the state. It really, the taxing district of this law is the state. And so any tax impact from this law really should be shared by all property taxpayers in the state, not just the ones where that land happens to be. And that's my biggest discovery, in a sense.
That the benefits are statewide, but the tax impact
local.
Is local. So, Charlie, you're not opposed to a study committee?
No. I mean, devil's in the details, what the bill says, and I think that's why the forest products industry probably didn't support what was put forward. So it needs to be a fair study and an open study. We all get educated when we do that kind of thing. So
okay.
I think it's for the best.
Thank you both very much for being here. I really appreciate you taking the time. Charlie Levesque, great to see you. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Charlie Levesque, president of Innovative Natural Resource Solutions. And Rusty Keith, thank you also.
Can we also put in a plug for the current use forums that are happening this week so that the public tries to attend? There's one in Lancaster tomorrow, I believe.
Forums on current use local level.
From the current use board.
The current use board holds a forum when they establish their rates. And
it's
part of the law that they must do that. And there's one in Lancaster, and then there's going to be one in New London, and then down in Concord. So.
All right. You got it in.
Please
thank
come.
You, Rusty, very much for being with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org or subscribe to our podcast. Search Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Stitcher for NHPR Exchange.